Well, let's talk about Nothing to Declare, which is a very clever title, and I assume you pack very lightly on your travels through Mexico. Mm-hmm. By the way, I was talking just a week or so ago to Clifford Irving, who lives in San Miguel.
That's right, he does live in San Miguel.
He must live in a better part of it than you.
Yes, no, he has a very nice house in a very nice part of it.
Because you lived in, I think they call it the San Antonio?
I lived in the neighborhood called San Antonio, which, well, actually this was kind of an accident. I inadvertently moved into a slum. It would be like coming to Manhattan and moving into the South Bronx in a renovated building, you know, the one renovated building in the South Bronx. So I moved into the equivalent in San Antonio, in this part of San Miguel, where there really weren't any Americans, and where I was really living with very impoverished Mexicans living on a very subsistence level.
When were you in Mexico for this odyssey?
The main part of the book is 78-79. I got a grant from the National Endowment in 78, and I went down then.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
It is, yeah, but it takes me... I mean, it took a while for the experience to become material. I mean, that doesn't happen right away for me. And I was surprised at how long it took, but it just took that long.
Did you keep a journal?
I kept a journal, and I never really planned to write a book about it, but then when I was reading in my journals one day, I saw that I had written, maybe I'll write about this someday, but it wasn't a plan. It wasn't any kind of a planned idea that I had.
All right, well, let's talk about your trip to Mexico and some of the things that happened to you. First of all, why did you decide to go there?
I decided to go because I was unhappy living in New York. It wasn't a good time in my life. I didn't think things were happening professionally and personally, and I got a grant, and I wanted to go somewhere and write for a year, and I didn't want to go to Europe. I wanted a third world experience. I wanted to see a very different kind of form of life than what I was used to seeing.
Why San Miguel?
I asked somebody where was a nice place for an American to go and use as a base, because what I like to do when I travel is I like to go somewhere and have a nice base, and then from there go off on various excursions, which is what I did. Sometimes as long as 6 weeks, but I use San Miguel as my base. It is a nice place to live.
And your intention was to spend this year writing. What were you working on?
Well, I was working on a novel, that novel Crossroads, and I was working on short stories and that came out in my first book, Vanishing Animals. And my intention was to write, and also I was interested in being a photojournalist at the time, and I was still interested in photojournalism. And I went to study a little bit of photography and, you know, take some pictures and stuff like that. And I've done that. I did that.
I've never traveled by myself. I've always traveled with a girlfriend or a wife or an ex-wife or a boyfriend or something like that. And it always struck me as kind of scary to be by yourself and going, even going into a restaurant alone, I don't like to.
I don't like to go into restaurants alone either, Don. But I think sometimes if you want to go do something and there's not anybody to really do it with, and I think also as a writer, I have a lot of mental freedom when I'm traveling. I mean, like, I went Trans-Siberia from Peking to Berlin a few years ago, 2 years ago. Got on the train in Peking, got off in Berlin, got off in Moscow and Leningrad and some things like that. And that was about 5 weeks of traveling alone. And it was a very kind of inner experience for me. And I think the same thing with going to Mexico. I think that I went alone, and I think it was an enriching internal experience for me. I mean, it's not exactly fun. You know, you don't, like, go to the beach and have a good time, exactly. But it's a growing kind of experience.
But you have the tendency of being able to meet people. In fact, it might be easier for a woman to meet people and travel with
strangers. Well, it doesn't mean you're going to meet the kind of people you want to meet, right? I mean, yeah, it is easier to meet people. And I think I've tried to meet the best kinds of people that I can meet when I'm traveling. I've made a few mistakes, obviously. We all make mistakes in those ways. But yeah, I've always been able to meet people. You know, except in California for some... I have met people in California. That's unfair to California. But it's harder in California because you spend so much time driving from place to place that you have to... Every meeting, it becomes a production. You know?
But in Nothing to Declare, of course, you tell us that you not only were able to meet people, but you managed to pick up a couple of boyfriends.
Well, I think I'd like to phrase it a little bit more differently than that, if I could. I met some people who became important to me who happened to be males. Yes, I met a very nice man, Alejandro, who was a Mexican, 100% Aztec, and a very very special person, a very good person. And also in one of my trips through the jungle, I did meet an American named Josh. And I think that was in a moment of a lot of loneliness. I was in inland Honduras, which is not exactly the most appealing place in the world. And he was an American, and he was smart, and he was somebody I could talk to. And, you know, you have these lonely moments on the road, I'm sure. I'm sure there are male travel writers that have them, but they maybe they don't have more trouble putting the personal in their books.
Well, Alejandro, have you maintained a...
No, I'm not in touch. I'm not in touch.
Not in touch with him at all after all those.
He showed up on my doorstep. Yeah, he showed up on my doorstep in New York City about 2 years after I left. He just showed up, and it was one of those things that's just sort of inappropriate in New York. I don't know. I was sort of shocked to see him ringing my doorbell in New York to surprise me, and but that was a, you know, we really were not going to go anywhere as a couple.
One of the more disagreeable people in your book was the young American writer who was writing about his Vietnam experiences.
Yes.
Did he ever get that book published?
Not to my knowledge.
Was that his real name, or did you?
No, I changed that, and actually what he was writing is a bit of an amalgam. I mean, I had to make him a little bit different for obvious reasons. But to my knowledge, that person didn't. He's a little bit of a composite, I hope I don't, that's okay to admit, because... there were a lot of Americans kind of like that guy down there. And for some legal reasons, I had to change things around a little bit.
Now, as you traveled, you tended, I know that you had one trip with a young woman, I think her name was Catherine.
Catherine.
And for she was the one who always liked to sleep in the
most
inexpensive
anywhere.
Places.
Yes.
Tell me about this trip with her.
Well, my trip with Catherine was, and Catherine and I should say, 10 years later, are best friends. I mean, we've maintained a very long, complicated friendship. And
is that her real name?
No. I've changed I've changed almost every name in the book. I think there's actually something that says that I've changed all the names in the book.
I see. Mm-hmm.
In the front. I just had to do that to satisfy the legal department at Houghton Mifflin. I even had to change the names of pets and things like that for identification purposes. But that's a different problem in terms of writing nonfiction these days, and it has to do with libel. But Catherine and I are very, very close. And the trip with her was very complicated. First of all, she arrived 4 days late. We had a rendezvous date. I got a cable from her that said, behind schedule, Catherine. We were supposed to go through the jungle together. You know, and when you're set to go to the jungle with somebody and they arrive 4 days late, you have to make do for 4 days at the edge of the jungle. And so I did that. And I found that when she arrived, I was really sort of put off by her arrival. I wanted to kind of continue on my own. And we had a lot of tension on that trip, and we had some very bad experiences also.
But the decision to stay in the sleaziest... hotels, and isn't that an uncomfortable experience?
Well, it is, but it's also interesting. I mean, if you're going to see the world, I don't regret any. I'm glad I didn't stay in the tin box in Puerto Juarez that she wanted to stay in, because I think I wouldn't have been able to make it through the night. But I think overall, staying in a hammock place or sleeping in a straw bed and at the Honduran border, that as I did, I think those are kind of growing experiences. I mean, I don't think you get that much out of the, you know, Princess in Acapulco if you want growth experiences.
Now, you're talking about 10 years ago, but it was a little eerie, wasn't it, going into Honduras, and you saw a lot of soldiers, Guatemala?
Yeah, I think I was a little naive, and I think it was eerie, and I think it was also dangerous, and I think it was frightening. And I think, again, I think that, you know... I saw a bumper sticker in California the other day, no brain, no pain. And I feel sort of no pain, no brain, whichever way it goes. I feel that, you know, that you have to take some risks if you're going to learn things. You know, and I learned a lot about Central America, and I learned a lot about the world by traveling, and I took some risks.
What was your most unpleasant experience during this period?
Oh, that's hard to say. I mean, I think
but you became ill at one point.
Yeah, I would have died if I hadn't gotten proper medical care.
What happened?
I got peritonitis. I had some kind of an abscess that ruptured, and if I'd been out in the bush, or if I hadn't known to go to the American British Hospital, I would probably be dead right now. I also knew I was dying when it happened. I mean, I was about an hour outside of the main part of Mexico City, and I was with Alejandro, and I had this terrible pain, and I woke up, and it only hurt if I moved. And I remembered in the Westerns where the cowboys said it only hurts if I laugh. And I thought, that's how I felt. I felt if I laughed, it hurt, and I thought, I'm going to die. And I got myself to the American British Hospital, which anybody listening, I hope if they're over in Mexico City, that's the place to go. Don't go anywhere else.
If they're sick.
If you're sick, yeah. If you're well, don't bother. But I think the most unpleasant experience for me was when I was... swimming at the waterfall, and the boy that was swimming with me went down the falls and died. And I think that experience, out of all the experiences I've had in Mexico, stays in my mind because, first of all, it showed me a lot about life and death south of the border. That was a place where other people had died, and there was no sign, there was no warning, there was nothing to keep us from swimming in this pool at the base of a falls. And also, I had this desire to say something to the boy, to say, should you be swimming so far out in the pool? I'm a fairly strong swimmer, but I didn't go as far out in this little pool. It was like 20 waterfalls. I didn't go as far out. And I wanted to say something to him, and I didn't. And I think actually it was very American of me not to intervene in that way, not to, of course, our American politics certainly intervenes, but for me not to butt in on his, you know, with the, what he was doing. And he died, you know, and I think that is the most unpleasant thing I remember.
You did your traveling on buses. Wouldn't you have found it the country more accessible if you'd driven? Yeah, car.
Well, again, Don, I wanted a face-to-face experience with the country. I wanted a hands-on experience. And I think, yes, if you drive, or yes, if you stay in nice hotels or sleep in nice beds and all that, you have a nicer experience. But I wasn't looking for that kind of experience. I mean, I wanted to be with the people. I wanted to experience their way of life. I wanted to sleep the way they slept, and I did all that.
Now, you were in Mexico for quite a while, and obviously there were lots of problems. And I think Alejandro would just kind of shrug and say, well, that's Mexico.
Right.
Tell me about the difficulty in just surviving in a country like Mexico.
Well, I mean, I think there's a difference between surviving in Mexico City and surviving outside of Mexico City. But I mean, just simple things like mail communications, telephones, getting telegrams. I mean, telegrams, I would send a telegram to Alejandro telling him when I'd be back from a trip, and it would arrive 3 weeks later. You know, you could never be sure that anything would arrive. I was in the process of editing galleys on a book that got lost somewhere in some cargo. You know, it was sent Federal Express or whatever, and, you know, they got lost. And, I mean, those kinds of basic things that we take for granted are really, you cannot take them for granted in Mexico. You know, it's an underdeveloped country. I mean, it's a country that looks developed, but basically it's not developed. And just the kinds of things that we take for granted, like being able to get a phone installed or whatever, is very difficult there. So those things are difficult. And medical care is not good.
Did you ever feel for your safety, fear for your safety?
Oh, sure, all the time, every day.
All the time?
Well, first of all, there's always a concern when you're eating and things like that. And you know, and I was in some pretty peculiar places. And you go to those peculiar places and there's nothing, you know, you have to eat. So I learned, you know, that certainly I was concerned about. And in Honduras, when I slept on a straw mat, there's a terrible disease called Chagas disease, which I'm very afraid of. And you get it from possums, floors frequented by possums, and they carry a beetle on them called an assassin beetle. And this beetle, if it bites you, it then defecates in the wound, and you can get this disease that's like AIDS. And I'm very afraid of that disease. It's the only disease I'm really afraid of. And I had to sleep in a straw floor in a place that looked like there could be a possum walking through, you know. So, yeah, I was afraid a lot. And I was afraid of men occasionally. But I know how to tell people to get lost in Spanish, which I think is very useful.
Yeah. Were you able to draw any conclusions about Mexico and Central America after your almost 2 years there?
Yeah, I think I was able to draw a lot of conclusions. I think Americans have really a lot of misinformation about what's really going on in Central America, and we really don't understand the situation down there. I mean, we're talking about poor countries whose economy is mainly economy of dependency. I mean, these people, I'm talking individuals now, they look to the United States with such awe and amazement, and also with a lot of hatred and a lot of resentment, and it's a very complicated relationship. I mean, for whatever my politics were when I went down, I mean, I feel very, very strongly that intervention is not the way to make things work out in Central America. I mean, that Central America, I mean, I think that Nicaragua is a country that really has struggled under a horrible dictatorship for many, many, many years, and that they deserve a right for self-determination. And I think they're trying. I mean, if that answers your question. I feel that they're trying, and I feel that the best thing for the United States to do is to step out.
Mary, you went down there on a grant. Did you get any work done?
I got this book researched, although I wasn't intending it. I mean, it's hard to know what getting work done means.
Well, doesn't the grant expect you to produce
something? No, I wasn't under obligation to produce, and I feel that even producing this 10 years later, although I don't know how I'm going to do it on my taxes because this is all the new tax law, but I think I got a lot of work done. I mean, it certainly showed up on the page now because I've written this book. And I did work on my novel. I mean, there were a lot of things in the way of getting work done. I mean, I brought an electric typewriter, and the electricity went out at least once a day. So that can tend to stop your work routine. And there were problems in getting work done. And also, I was very lonely, and I was living in a way out-of-the-way place without a phone or any connection to anybody I knew. So it was hard. But I think I got another kind. I think I got a lot of internal work done.
Kind of a spiritual experience.
Yeah, I do. Maybe that sounds corny, but I think I got some spiritual work done. I think I learned a lot more how to be with myself and how to do my work and what my work is about. And I think I learned a lot about myself as a woman and about other women and about the way the world works. And I think for a writer, that's work.
Oh, I think so, too. And last week I was talking to Michael Crichton, mm-hmm. who has a new book called Travels.
Right.
Which is not, it's not like yours, I guess. It's really a series of essays. But he did a number of things, like climbing Kilimanjaro, which is not an unusual mountain to climb. People do it all the time. But it took 3 days to do it, and he almost ruined his feet doing it.
Right.
You wonder why he wanted to do it, and but every experience that he had amounted to something in his life that made life more worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
It was a learning experience as well as mm-hmm. an emotional one. So I think that maybe I'm not phrasing this very well, but I think probably you said it better. Just by the very nature of doing something, sleeping on a bed of straw. Something I don't think I'd want to do, but
mm-hmm.
just doing it.
It's not for everybody.
You can look back and say, I've done this. This is something I've done.
Well, and you take yourself to a certain limit. I mean, Henry Miller has this wonderful quote in The Colossus of Maruzi, his book on Greece, which is kind of a book that's inspired me a lot. He says the voyages are accomplished inwardly, and the most difficult are made without moving from the spot. And I think that there's a lot of truth in it. I think that you can test yourself in ways without even going anywhere. I mean, I think that there are things I did in this book. I mean, I never thought I could sleep on a bed of straw. I never thought I could live with certain things. I never, but I did. I was able to do that, and I feel that I can take other difficult situations in my life and make them work for me also.
Any plans to go back?
Well, I have a daughter now, and I think that I can't exactly see myself. I'm living 2 hours from Tijuana, and I haven't taken her across the border. No, I don't plan to go back to South America right now, Central America. Actually, I feel the South Pacific calling. I'd like to spend a little time.
What's going to happen to your fiction?
How do you mean?
Well, if you're going to do all this traveling, how are you going to
find
time to write?
Well, it feeds my fiction. No, it all works into my fiction, and I don't know. I mean, I think that I mean, I've just finished a novel that'll be out next year called The Waiting Room, and I think my fiction will... It's just not something I'll stop doing.
It'll take care of itself.
It seems to take care of itself. I seem to always be doing that wherever I am. In fact, I get a lot done on the road. It's actually my daughter that may slow me down a little bit more, and I think it's going to be a while before I go off again, but maybe in a couple of years I will go do something. A year in California is a year of traveling also.
Well, Nothing to Declare is a wonderful book, Mary Morris. I enjoyed reading it. I think I read it in one sitting.
Well, that's nice to know.
I think I read it Sunday a week ago, and it was nonstop, easy to read, and a very nice book. And it's always nice talking to you, Mary.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.